Go ahead. I didn't sign it either. Where is my paper? Where did she go?
What? I forget if she wandered down the hall to get you.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to start the meeting. I want to thank everybody for coming. The day is lovely, and I want to especially thank Greg Olson from coming all the way from Albany. I've known Greg a long time, and he is really Deputy Director of the New York State Office for the Aging Division of Policy, Research, and Legislative Affairs. He's going to give a New York State budget update and discuss other issues relating to the senior programs and services. And Greg tells you the way it is in language that is pure and simple to understand, okay? And
can't live up to that.
You can't. You really can't. I mean, I'm that way, too. I tell you what's on my mind and how I feel, and that's it. Like it or not, this is what is happening, and this is what he's going to tell you is happening. And the only problem is the budget should have been passed in April, and the state is in very bad financial problems having it. And the cities, the counties, and everybody else does. And until we hear what your news and your budget is, every one of us is sitting on pins and needles. The lady that was talking to you over there said to me, are we going to get a 19% increase in White Plains? I said, I don't know what the state is coming down with, so we can't say anything. Didn't I? Okay. And this is it. Okay. What he's going to tell you is what he knows as of now. Tomorrow, it may be another story. Okay, Greg.
All right. Well, thank you all. I'm always pleased to be here and see be among friends. Just a quick context, and you all read this in the paper, but I think it's important. You know, last year the state had to close a $17 billion deficit. This year's deficit has climbed to $9.2 billion, which you've all read in the papers. Because of the holidays that happened around April 1 and just some disagreements between the governor's office, the assembly, and the Senate on the direction of the budget, they wanted to wait till the April 15th tax returns come in to find out how much money they actually have and if the deficit has grown more, which I think any of us would think that it probably has. Those numbers haven't been released, but they should be any time now. So I don't know if it's going to be a $10 billion deficit. It could go down, I mean, for all we know. But I think we're anticipating that it's not. In terms of our office, the Office for the Aging, and the programs and dollars that MAE provides, I think last year we did extremely well given the $17 billion deficit. We actually got an increase of $5 million. For the home delivered meal program and for the ICEP and CSE lines, which provide personal care, case management, and a variety of other services, transportation, social adult day, and so on, that MAE can really use flexibly here at the local level. So coming into this budget year, what the governor had proposed for our agency, frankly, we were thrilled, given the status of the finances of the state. Basically, the only reductions we took in our budget was the $5 million that the Senate added last year for those programs that I just mentioned. And that's not precedented. That happens every year when you're in Albany. If the Assembly or Senate puts in what they call legislative ads, normally the executive, and it doesn't matter which governor, Governor Spitzer, Governor Pataki and on back, normally don't add that in. Now, again, when the governor puts his budget out, that's the beginning of a long process. But that's normally how that works, and so that's what happened. So we didn't have the $5 million that was added last year by the Senate, primarily. The Senate put out their resolution, and what Senator Diaz, who's really been, the champion in the Senate, who chairs the Aging Committee, put out for our budget was the restoration of that $5 million. He had also proposed legislation which would basically make the home delivered meal program, the SNAP program, an entitlement. So in other words, anybody that wound up on a waiting list would automatically be funded by the state of New York to eliminate those waiting lists. So he proposed language, put it in the resolution to do that, and then provided another $2.5 million to fund that. And that was based on an estimate that we provided of what the cost would be. How we came up with that number is that at that time that this was all happening, both New York City and other counties were reporting a waiting list. Again, I don't know if you have one in Westchester, but since then, there have been no waiting lists. But there's money available should that proposal go through. Absolutely.
We don't have a waiting list on record. That's because our municipal subcontractors have been overfunding home delivered meals by 300% and 400%. And they have not been turning people away. But what that means is that as the municipalities are experiencing financial crises, you know, this is, you know, how did we get into this? This was supposed to be a state-funded program. Mm-hmm. So we do put in there the overfunding data, mm-hmm. because we don't know how long our municipalities, as generous as they have been, mm-hmm. are going to be able to continue. They're facing 19% property tax increases, et cetera. So they do want the state to pay what the state is supposed to be paying and not passing the cost down to the municipalities.
So that's an important point, because then if this does go through, hopefully the subcontractors will let you know, here's the folks that we can no longer overmatch, so to speak, and the state would pick up that cost. And I'll get into some other numbers in terms of what the counties have been doing over the last decade or so to really supplement, you know, not necessarily what the state hasn't provided, because when I give you those numbers too, I think you'll be, you know, pleasantly surprised that New York's really been a leader in stepping up to fund these programs. Our beef is at the federal level, and I'll explain why that is. That's what the Senate put in. They also added another $2 million for the HICAP program. And we've been working very hard with the legislature to talk about the value of the HICAP program, which is the Health Information Insurance Counseling and Assistance Program. Again, that is goes to May, and I don't know if you run it directly or subcontract. I mean, it's done differently in all the counties. But it provides very important information and intervention, one-on-one counseling for people dealing with Medicare, Medicare Part D, health insurance issues, Medigap, and all the very complexities of Medicare and other health insurance systems. I mean, we have 59 Part D prescription programs in New York State, so it's very hard to figure out which one is best for individuals. So we're thrilled at that. There's also an issue, and this was not an issue, thankfully, for Westchester, but it was for New York City and a couple other counties, that the governor had proposed a change in federal Title 20 money. It's basically a social services block grant that some of the communities used those discretionary dollars to fund senior service programs. The governor put a proposal in that would direct those funds to go into domestic violence and adult protective service programs to save the state money. The outcome of that, which none of us was aware of, is that it would cut $25 million from senior centers in New York City. It would cut $1 million for information assistance and other services in Nassau County and then a couple other counties. So the Senate had proposed to basically buy that back, which means not support that proposal and make sure that the city continued to provide those resources to senior centers, because they were looking at about 100 closures out of 300 centers, and most likely those closures would have been in diverse areas of the city, and that's just not a good plan. And again, the governor's office did not know of this. Once we all kind of figured it out, there's been a lot of advocacy to try to reinstate those funds. So again, that's the Senate's position. Looks pretty good for our budget in terms of at least where their priority is. On the Assembly side, they just basically put 50% back into two very small programs. One is a statewide hospital patients' rights hotline, and one is called the CSI program, Congregate Services Initiative, which provides small grants to the counties for could be health fairs or programs in a senior center. Again, it varies depending on where you are in the state. They did not propose to put back the $5 million increase that the Senate put in last year. And again, that's standard also for Albany. When one house puts the money in, the other house isn't going to put it in. They're going to make the Senate do it. Or if the Assembly puts money in, the Senate's going to not put that money in and make the Assembly do it. It's just the way that it works, but that's okay. They also rejected the Title 20 cut that I just mentioned and proposed to buy that back at 75%, so basically a 25% cut. Since then, Assemblyman Dinowitz, who's chair of the Assembly Committee, got 56 of his Assembly colleagues in the city to sign a letter to the Speaker for full restoration. Now, I raised that because when I worked in the Assembly, if you could get 15 to 20 members to sign on to a letter to the Speaker, that really made the Speaker's office take notice. He got 56 members to do this. And again, if I were to gamble and say what I think is going to happen, I think that issue is off the table. And I think that, again, now we have this week to go, and the budget will probably be done by the end of the week. I would assume that the $5 million that we had last year will be restored. That is yet to be seen, but again, if I were to, you know, bet on that, that's about where I would be. Any questions so far? Okay. And that's obviously good for Westchester, who has a large population, and the way that we distribute money is population-based. Now, I had mentioned earlier our beef with the feds. Here's our beef. Over the last 10 years, we've gotten $5 million from the federal government to fund our programs and services, an increase of $5 million. Over that same decade, New York State, the governor and the legislature has funded these programs at $44 million. The counties are providing $32 million above and beyond the required match. So that doesn't include the match for both federal programs and the 25% match for ICEP and CSE. So it's another $32 million. So over the last decade, New York State has stepped up and provided over $74 million for these programs. Our state funding exceeds what we get federally. So what we're really demanding of our congressional delegation is to really take a look at this network. You know, May was just talking about how we save the system money, Medicaid dollars. You know, we're able to intervene earlier, make sure that people can remain at home and not wind up in institutions, and provide health promotion and wellness services and all the kinds of things that, you know, happen here at the county level. We're going into what's called the reauthorization year for the Older Americans Act, and that's the federal legislation that, you know, creates the offices, which then, you know, creates the county offices. And so, you know, we're pushing very heavily in the reauthorization, not only for some, you know, technical changes to the budget and, you know, programs that we would like to see funded, like the livable communities that has really matured itself here. I mean, we'd like to see those kinds of things expanded nationwide, but also significant amount of increases in the budget. Now, the first question is going to be, where do you get the money, right? Because that's what everybody asks. Well, the health care reform bill that just passed is supposed to save $1.3 trillion over the next 10 years. And I would argue, with a straight face and realistically, that if you invest a couple hundred million dollars in our network, that $1.2, $1.3 trillion will actually grow because of the fact that we can keep people out of hospitals, keep people out of emergency rooms, keep people out of rehab, keep people out of nursing homes, keep people from spending down to Medicaid and so on. And those are the two big areas, Medicare and Medicaid, that the health care reform bill addressed, as well as private insurance issues. So we're pushing heavily on that. And when our recommendations are done, I'll make sure that you all get a copy of that, because over the next year or so, we're going to have to be really pushing the congressional delegation here in New York to help us out. We've met with Senator Gillibrand. We're starting to meet with House members, and we're going to need that kind of support from, you know, you, Bernice, and others really around the state, because this is an opportunity to make some important changes, but also to ask the federal government to do what's right, because the states and the counties can't continue on the path that we're on, given our fiscal crisis, which is really number two in the nation. Right. So that's kind of where we are, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
You know, the pet question that I have, which I asked you at May's meeting, okay, mm-hmm. was the ICEP program, okay, which I don't understand how the federal government or the state people can't understand that they could save money. We're talking about a lot of money, okay? We're talking about getting people to stay in their house. ICEP means in-care home services, okay, instead of going to nursing homes that cost $100,000, $120,000, okay, whether the federal government pays for it or the state pays for it, it's being paid for. Now, if these people could be taken care of in their own home and not have to go to the place, how much did we save, May? It was
$120,000 a year. For every year you can keep a person out of a nursing home. And home-delivered meals only run $700 a year per person.
So you add that, 700 and 120, okay, and we're talking about $100,000, $120,000. It's penny wise and pound foolish. We, you know, and this is what really bothers me. This is what it's mind boggling. You want to save money? We're telling you how. You save people. The health that they get, the care that they get at home, is no way the care that they get. I don't care what the nursing home is, okay? I've been there, I saw it, I visited it, many of my seniors through the years, okay? And they don't have enough help. They're in wheelchairs the whole, in front of the nurse's station. They don't get taken to the bathroom if they're on the end. My mother, may she rest, I'll never forget it. She got bed sores and she was the cleanest woman because she wasn't taken to that bathroom and she had to remain in bed with a machine constantly. I feel sorry for these people. Let them remain with dignity. Let them be taken care of. And we're saving money.
Right. I mean, there's really two ways to answer that. And, you know, one of the great things about working in this office and working with Director Burgess, it's part of our mission to advocate. And we make the same points. You know, the average person to keep on the ICEP program for a year is $4,000. And the average person stays on ICEP for 10 years. So you do the math here, 40-something thousand dollars over a decade versus $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. Couple reasons why it's difficult to get this investment. Number one, budgets don't work that way. The legislature and the governor, and I don't think this is any different than at the county level, deals with a year at a time. There's no long-range planning. And so in order to put money into the system, you have to invest in a year where you're trying to reduce money. So that's number one, and that's a problem. That's just the way the budgeting works. The second issue around ICEP is now with the Medicaid cap that the counties have, it doesn't cost the counties any more than they're already planning on spending in Medicaid to actually shift people to the Medicaid program. The state picks up the cost. So just let me lay out an issue for you. Because the county now knows on an annual basis how much their Medicaid program is going to go up, which is a maximum of 3.5%, we're actually seeing counties that are being directed to shift their ICEP caseload to Medicaid. Because in the ICEP program, you have a 25% match that the county has to come up with. On the Medicaid side, you're capped at what you have to spend. So it's the state picking up, right, that's what ICEP does. So, you know, we're seeing like in New York City, and I'm not sure if that's happening here, but that's again an unintended consequence of the state trying to help the counties by managing their Medicaid costs. So in Albany County, for example, they run out of ICEP money in June. And so what they're doing is shifting people over to Medicaid. Now, the second thing and final thing, sure.
So, but don't some of those people not qualify for Medicaid?
Everybody can qualify for Medicaid, and here's how. We have the Medicaid spend-out, which means if you have medical expenses, let's say you make $1,500 a month, and your medical expenses are $800 a month, you spend that down, you're below the Medicaid level if you have resources that are also down, which went up, by the way, to about $13,000 a year. But if you make $800, you can qualify for Medicaid. So,
but the person that's being shifted would have to spend more money.
Would have to spend down if they're not already.
We looked at all of our ICEP clients. And in order for them to spend down, they would have to become homeless because they'll be using their rent
that's
to spend
point.
Down. Right. So that's one man's working question
to
count,
work, yeah.
Where the rents are high. They just don't have any extra money after they pay these rents to be able to apply towards a home care cost, medical cost.
Yeah, and our state average in terms of who our ICEP clients are 78-year-old women with very low incomes that have very high needs. So again, things are different in every county, but these are the things that we're hearing. And, you know, frankly, as a policy, you know, how could we support telling people they need to impoverish themselves to receive care. But that's kind of what's happening here. And again, that's why we're going back to the feds, because our ICEP program is a $49 million program. We do get money from the federal government to help support that through the Title IIIB program, but it's not nearly enough. And we haven't even talked about the population changes and the longevity of folks and how long they're living. So we totally concur with what you're saying. We advocate very strongly, but those are just some of the realities of the whys it's so difficult to do this.
But there are two issues. First of all, in 1990, we were getting 65% of our 80 spending power from the federal government. So it's even worse now. But the other issue is that they're using those federal eligibility guidelines, which favors the South, the Southwest, does not favor the Northeast, which means a lot of people who would have been eligible for entitlement programs here are not eligible because of these poverty guidelines. I mean, for instance, their budget is that for a budget for a person, for one person would be that person should, that person could spend $442 for a one-bedroom apartment. You can't even rent a room in somebody's house here in Westchester County for $442. So they're totally unrealistic. As a matter of fact, we have a meeting this afternoon down in the city with Statewide, with this study that's
the
being
well,
done.
To look at the
index in terms of the real cost of living versus these entitlement eligibility guidelines. They just don't work for us here. People are living in all types of substandard housing, illegal housing, doing any and everything just to be able to not be homeless, keep a roof over their heads. So we've got to do something with those federal eligibility guidelines. My niece, who's finishing her last year in college, decided to buy a house in Kentucky, and I'm still upset. I'm happy for her, but I found out that she got a four-bedroom house in a nice neighborhood, brick house, two-car garage, finished basement with fireplace, and our house note payments, $440 a month.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's move to Kentucky.
Wow.
You know, and when you look at how people are having to live here, with the cost of living, with the housing costs, and they don't take that in consideration with these eligibility guidelines.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Are you going to coordinate something? You know, you told them about going to our senators and representatives at federal level, and I know there's a real concern about the Medicaid reimbursement rates connected to what May's saying, that with the new healthcare legislation there needed to be some kind of reconciliation because New York would get hurt,
right,
given its past structure and practice. Do you know where that stands at this point?
I don't. I know that our health department, governor's office are working with Congress to try to deal with those situations. There's others that, you know, we're learning about, like We get bigger rebates for our own negotiation on prescription drugs. The federal bill, the way that they drafted this, would provide a 50% rebate to the states. Well, we do better than that. So now we're not sure if we actually are going to pay more if the nation has to abide by the 50% rebate. Right now, we pay average wholesale price minus 16%, which is 5% better than what the national rate is. So there's a lot of those types of things that, you know, again, I don't think we have any idea because of the 2,000-page bill. And it was funny because we went and met with the health department on something else, and they're using the Kaiser Family Foundation analysis of the bill as where they're getting their information, because things are coming out very slowly from, you know, HHS, the federal Medicare, Medicaid. I just think that's phenomenal that, you know, even the state agencies are using an advocacy organization's analysis of the bill. So it's going to be there's going to be a lot of those types of technical issues that we have to deal with.
Great.
I think you're right in terms of this project is very important because there are cost of living issues all over, and there's also funding formula issues within the Older Americans Act that hurt New York State.
But they changed that with the last reauthorization. We were talking to Senator Gillibrand about that, and New York is not getting the money. They changed the formula that sends the money someplace else. And they're not looking at the fact that our population is aging faster than the populations are aging in other parts of the country.
Right, they're using proportional growth.
Yeah.
So if Nevada has one older adult and one person moves in, that's 100% increase. New York State has 3.5 million people. In order for us to get the similar ratio, we'd have to have 7 million older people. So the reason that was is when the it was reauthorized last time, the leadership of the House and the Senate were from those states, and they were able to shift money away from the Northeast and the Midwest. The good thing is the new HHS secretary and the Administration on Aging secretary are both from Kansas, and Kansas was one of the states like ours that was hurt.
Excuse me. How about Greg? How about Epic? What do you hear? Is it going to remain?
And I know that was an issue at the town hall that we came down to, or that I was at a couple months ago. And you know the governor's proposal, and what he proposed to do is really make the Medicare program the primary payer. There were a lot of ways that the Medicare Advantage programs in Part D were skirting the system and making Epic pick up the cost of drugs that Medicare should have been covering. So the proposal dealt with things like that. The Senate rejected all of the governor's proposals. The Assembly is proposing some modifications. In terms of the negotiations, we haven't received any information on where they are. I can't imagine that as it was proposed, it will stand because both houses have some issues with it. So there'll be some modifications, if anything is done at all.
Okay, thank you. Anybody?
I'd be happy to take any questions. I have a meter running downstairs too. So.
Anybody have any questions that Greg could answer?
ICEP, it's the Expanded In-Home Services for the Elderly program, and it provides personal care level 1 and 2, which is basically things like homemaker, chore, meal preparation, things of that nature. It also provides case management and other ancillary services, so one-time type of expenses that somebody might need to remain in their home. And it's provided by home care agencies through contracts with the Office for Aging.
And it's means-tested.
Yep. Well, it's not means tested. There's cost share. So the higher your income, you pay 100%. The lower your income, there'd be a sliding scale cost share.
But they make some allowance for housing costs.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Anybody else? Who?
I was curious. You sounded pretty sure that the budget would be finished by
the end of the
I think most of the budget they already had an outline and an agreement on what they were doing. I think the revenue forecast is huge because coming up with an additional 500, 800 million is going to be a big deal after the 9.2. But I know that there's a lot of pressure to get the budget done. It's an election year. People want to get home. They want to make sure that they can do their campaigning, et cetera. This is not going to drag out that far. I mean, again, you never know how things are going to pan out, but I think everybody is expecting within the next week or two that this will be wrapped up and done.
Yeah, what did we see in the paper this morning? What was holding it up? There was something that they want to give back money?
Star rebate.
And that was holding it up?
Well, right, that's just one issue. I mean, normally what you have is the governor, the Speaker of the Assembly, representing the Assembly majority, and the Majority Leader of the Senate are the negotiators of the budget. What you have now with a Senate that's 32 Democratic members, and you need 32 votes, is you have the Governor, the Speaker, and 32 members. Every member can derail the whole budget process in the Senate, because they need every vote. And so you could have, John Smith, Senator from wherever, who wants this. And if he doesn't get it, he can threaten vote no. So it's a totally different dynamic. Now, the rebate is just one of the things that is going to come up. There's a variety of other ones, but it's a whole different dynamic because you have to appease 32 members who are just, frankly, they're all over the place.
Right. Okay.
Fascinating place to work, I have to tell you.
And we have the census now, which does not affect anything until later on. But
that's a huge issue.
I know.
And why the budget will get wrapped up, because this is the census then you redistrict. And
right.
So who controls the Senate is going to be very important, because if the Republicans control the Senate based on the election, they're going to want to draw districts that make sure they stay in power. And the Assembly does the same thing. So this isn't one party or another. If the Democrats stay in the Senate, they're going to draw districts that look different to make sure that they stay in power. Now, again, if the Democrats wind up holding on to the Senate, you can probably say that that party will be the majority in New York State for a very long time to come, just because of the registered enrollment of New York State. I mean, if you look at the districts now, they're like Rorschach. They're all over the place because they carve out pockets to make sure people vote one way or another.
Yeah, and you're going to have people playing games with this, you know, because it's so close now. And you may lose a seat. You may lose a congressional seat, a Senate seat, according to the population and how many people fill out that. And we've been going around telling them, fill out that census because we get money.
It's very important. Yep. Absolutely.
Are they doing anything about counting the prisoners based upon the counties where they come from? Because they might be upstate for just 3 years.
Right, but
they're residents.
Then
they're back down in the southern part of New York the rest of the time for everybody else to take care of them, because we're not getting any money.
You know,
the monies
I
are still going upstate when they're working for three.
I can address that.
She can address that.
There are two bills, one before the Senate and one before the Assembly, to do that. But they place the burden on the Board of Elections rather than on the legislature, which is really unfair. So I doubt if anything will get done this year, really. It's too bad, really, because if they did it based on place of residency, incarcerated prisoners, that would mean that at least 3 to 4 seats in Republican districts would be lost in upstate New York, because they would revert back to their home areas, which is mostly metropolitan New York City.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. If that's no more questions, anybody want to know anything? From Greg?
Well, I want to know stuff. But
you want to know. Well, would you either let Rose know if anything traumatic changes over the next 2 weeks?
Absolutely.
That I could have to bring back to these people?
Absolutely. And I'll also make sure that you guys have a copy of our submission to the federal government on our Older Americans Act recommendations.
Okay, very good.
So you're asking for a 12% increase. Just a 12% increase in the federal
government. Right, it would only be $100 million. And we
for
would
the whole
get,
country.
We would get very little of that, unfortunately. But it's a start, you know. I mean, the president did propose $102.5 million for caregiver support programs and some other programs, again, that run out of May's organization. And I think why that's important is there's never been anybody at a level that high that has even uttered the word caregivers and understands the value and how important, you know, what people do for their loved ones every day are. Let alone, you know, put up $102 million. So that's a very good sign, at least in my mind, in terms of the value of what our network does and the recognition at the highest level of government that this is a family issue that needs to be addressed.
Well, he's got his mother-in-law living with him.
He wants her to go.
In the White House?
Yeah. Right.
Well, I don't think he wants to be
there. No, I don't think so.
This one. Yes.
All right. Well,
thank you all, and appreciate all that you do.
Okay. I need somebody to pass the minutes.
So move.
Okay.
Move by Ms. Williams, second by me.
Okay. Minutes are passed. The next meeting is?
Next Tuesday?
No, for senior, you know.
Oh, I don't have the date.
You don't?
I don't remember the date offhand.
Okay, all right. But but you said
it's education.
It's the Attorney General's office coming to talk about scams targeting seniors.
Oh, okay. All right. What'd you say? The Attorney General's office.
New York State Attorney General's office coming to talk about scams, specifically those targeting seniors.
All right. Okay.
We've been having them go through all our senior centers, to all our senior centers. They do a great job, and other places too. You know, church halls and things like that. It's really good, very beneficial.
The AG's office.
Is it Paul Thomas?
Crime Busters. All right. Thank you.